This is a download from the Post-Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting. Sorry for the shift in the presentation today. This is work done with André Lorenz Mesa and Marco Valente. It's actually a food project we have on modeling structural change in the relation between different dimensions of structural change, growth and development dynamics. This is a combination of what we think is a combination of Schumpeterian ideas and Keynesian ideas. So I didn't compile it well, sorry. References are missing, but it will work. So starting with a little bit of evidence here, we know that, or we observe world economies in the long run experiencing dramatic cross-country growth differences, right, from the before the Industrial Revolutions. And there's few what we could call stabilized facts, simply empirical evidence on the Industrial Revolution, which tell us that, for example, concentration in firm has increased quite a lot. Capital has increased in a few firms, and the size of firms has increased a lot. We observed a huge increase in the number of goods available for final consumption after the Industrial Revolution, closer involvement between science and technological change, increased use of capital both in agriculture and in industry, with an overall increase in productivity, urbanization, which led to income inequality and changes in social classes. So all of these are processes of structural change. And there's a nice quote by a good old friend, Matsuyama, who defines structural change as complementary changes in various aspects of the economy, such as sectoral composition of output, employment, organization of industry, financial system, income and wealth distribution, demography, political institutions, so on and so forth. It's a very nice definition. The problem is Matsuyama never used those dimensions in his own models for some reason. So it's nice to see how in the same year you have a very similar definition of structural change. It's a change in the structure of the economic system that is in its components and interaction of the components, where components are particular goods and services and other activities and institutions such as technologies, types of knowledge, organizational form, etc. But Saviotta and Gaffat, they go a little bit beyond Matsuyama, saying, so what's the, what does it mean to model such a system where the structure change in equilibrium? So basically we take on this suggestion and we model a system out of equilibrium. The focus of this paper is on three main aspects of structural change: the production technology, so capital, the productivity of capital, organization of production, the way in which the firm is organized in terms of tiers of managers and organization of the lower tiers laborers, and the composition of production, the heterogeneity of the goods offered in the market, and the changes, endogenous change that distribution of income and creation of new tiers, of new classes, defined in terms of preferences in consumption. And the main aims of the paper here is to model these different aspects of structural change, and particularly their microeconomic interactions, the microeconomic relations of this aspect of structural change. So we use exogenous parameters which define those aspects, and when we analyze those parameters in the way in which they affect how the system unfolds through time. And as I said, it's an attempt to put together Keynesian ideas and Schumpeterian ideas in one single model. I hope I'll be able to show that's the case, and it's quite productive to do so. Of course, it's a macroeconomic model. So the macroeconomic dimensions, we observe them as emerging properties. We do not impose them on the model. So as I said, we have five different components of structural change. We focus on three, but we look at five different components. The organization of production in terms of the number of tiers of executive coordinating the workforce, which depends on the size of the firm. The technology of production, which is mainly mapped by the speed of technological change. The composition of production, which here is measured as the initial, only the initial variance in the quality of goods. Price is endogenous, of course. And on the demand side, income distribution in terms of how different organization of the firm determine different levels or different income classes, and how this in turn induces different consumption patterns in terms of different preferences and, of course, different purchasing powers. Right, so after this hopefully quick introduction on the motivation and aims, what I'll do is to show the main features of the model. It's not complicated, but it's a sort of complex model. And then, of course, going to set the results, looking at the simulation of some of these results, and then we sum up and finally and try to draw some final considerations. So the main macroeconomic interactions here that represent structural change, which is the main mechanism behind the model, really. So for a given rate of investment of the firms, the larger is the increase in the productivity of capital vintages. We have two sectors, as we will see, consumption and the capital sector. The higher will be the growth of firm productivity. These are sort of what we aim for. An increase in firm productivity, in turn, would lead to an increase in the relative demand for the good of the firms via a reduction in prices, so the firm becoming more competitive with respect to the other firms producing the same good. The increase in firm sales is then followed by organizational change, because it's followed by the increase in the firm size, which require more tiers of managers to control the rest, to organize the rest of the production. And the increase in the number of organizational layers, in turn, induces the formation of new consumption classes, which are the new manager classes that form endogenously as the size of the firm increase. And for large earning disparities, this will also lead to higher purchasing parity of those new classes, and more inequality, of course. As I already said, basically this is a micro-to-macro simulation model. What we basically do, apart from developing the model, is to analyze the different parameters that control the three aspects of structural change using numerical simulations. All other parameters, believe me, but you can find them in the papers, they're all sort of calibrated to average observable values for those parameters for which we can observe values empirically. But all these details are in the papers, but we can discuss if you want. The main assumptions, as well as more, but the main assumptions here that we make is that different consumption classes earn a different wage, and they also, when they emerge, different consumption classes, they move toward different expenditure shares, so different purchasing capability and different tastes, really, different preferences. So we map income with preferences, which is a bit a strong assumption to do nowadays, but still, I mean, we have to cut somewhere. Income growth, we assume that it would increase labor force levels, so the amount of labor, and modify the organizations, because as you will see, we have hierarchical organization, increasing the level of demand, because we have more consumers and the heterogeneity of the demand, which means that income growth modifies both the composition of the class and the consumption patterns of the class. In its turn, the class composition of demand will affect the firm in terms of changing the type of product they produce, their competitiveness, and their organization, because, as I said, they increase in size, so they need to change their organization. The main finding, just in case I don't get to the end, basically what we do here is so you have questions ready for. We identify a number of stylized facts which characterize and explain patterns of growth at different stages of the development cycle. So we sort of contrast our results with macro stylized facts. Output growth is basically reduced by a very high initial variety of products and demand. So if you start a world where you have already all the goods out there and you don't allow this changes to grow through time as new classes emerge, the economy will sort of stagnate, will grow, but at a sort of Malthusian type of growth. Larger increases in firm size due to more tiers, these are organizational parameters we'll show in a minute, And the number of organizational layers, coupled with a faster technological change in capital vintages, leads to a higher productivity of output growth, even if this induces a higher inequality, which has a negative effect on growth, but the negative effect of inequality is smaller than the demand effect, the aggregate demand effect. Large earning disparities, together with a high number of intermediate levels of organization, lead to large income inequality, which in this case, because there's no higher productivity due to capital vintages, leads to lower output in the end. All right, let's go to the model. The basic model structure, as I said, two sectors, final good firms and capital good suppliers. Final good firms, they basically use labor and capital, which builds the capacity to produce and which determines the productivity, the labor productivity. And they're structured, as I said, as a hierarchical firm with different layers of managerial organization. Capital suppliers, they use only one input, labor. They produce the technology, the capital for consumer, for final goods firms, and they perform R&D to improve the productivity of this technology. They're also organized in a hierarchical form. Then we have the consumers, which are also the workers, of course, which use the income generated by the production, transformed into wages, and they do have preferences on the product, technology, and the quality produced by the firm, and also the price, as we see. Then we have one macroeconomic mechanism, which is the wage setting, the minimum wage, which is set at the macroeconomic level. I won't go into details of that, but we can discuss it. So the main features of the model, going a bit more into detail, in terms of firms' output first. Each firm, we have a number of firms, producing one single good, satisfying a consumer need. These firms will produce with a price index and a quality index, where the quality index is a parameter, the price is endogenous. The output is constrained by labor and capital, so basically we use a Leontief production function with capital and labor, where this is one of the main parameters we see is the labor productivity embedded in capital vintages. Price is determined as a markup on variable cost, which depend on the size of the firm, because the size of the firm will determine how many managers the firm has to employ, which are non-productive, and the labor productivity at the shop floor level. In terms of organization of production, as I said, first of all, firms recruit the employed, the shop floor workers, and this depends on their demand expectations. I won't go into that now, and depends on the labor productivity, of course. But mainly, we have a number of shop floor workers which are required by the firm to produce. Given the number of shop floor workers, every new workers, in the symbol, not in terms of being a novelty, firms will have to require one manager at the second tier. And of course, when you reach new managers at the second tier, the firm will require one manager for the third tier, so on and so forth. So you create a pyramid, basically what we observe in terms of firms. You have top management, and then different layers of managers, and in the end, the workers. So that's it, that's the main, and the main parameter that we observe here that we want to control is new, which determines how many workers a manager can control, which determines as well the width of the pyramid base. In terms of technology of production, as I said, we have a productivity term which depends on the vintages that the firm purchased, the firms in the final sector purchased through time. The important thing here is that there's a purchasing decision we won't go through now. The capital good firms, in their turn, innovate, improving the productivity through a stochastic R&D process. And it's a very simple stochastic process, very straightforward. But the important thing here is that the productivity of the new machines depends on a normal distribution with a given variance, sigma A, and increasing the variance, the firms have a higher likelihood from the capital sector have a higher likelihood of finding capital with higher productivity. Okay? So increasing sigma M basically have a higher probability of increasing the overall productivity or increasing the productivity of the new vintages which are bought by the finer good firms. In terms of the income distribution, so the structural dimension on the first structural dimension on the demand side, given the minimum wage which is negotiated at the macroeconomic level, we said we have this pyramidal structure. So the shop floor workers will earn a multiplier of the minimum wage, fine. And then what's interesting is that the first tier of managers will earn a multiplier of the first tier of workers, of the shop floor workers. Second tier of manager multiplier of that. So we have an exponential increase in wages, as we know, until we reach CEOs who earn a huge amount of money, as we know. And they also receive bonuses from profits which are not invested in capital. So all this is sort of in line with what we more or less observe. Consumption patterns, each class is populated by the workers of one tier of the firm, with consumption level differing by labor income classes and with given preferences we see in a minute. Consumer behavior, this is a bit tricky. For each perceived price and quality, so consumers do not have perfect information. Right? There's again, they draw their information from a probability distribution, but that's not very relevant. What is relevant is that consumers are willing to buy all the goods which are close enough to the best good they would buy. So consumers do not optimize. Sorry about that. And they may know that there's the perfect good. But they will buy all those goods which are close enough to this perfect good. And whether it's close enough is determined by this parameter, which we could call a sort of tolerance level, which means how far would be a good in terms of price or quality from the best good available in the market. So to make an example, if you want to buy a laptop, you look at many characteristics. You look at the screen, the memory, the hard disk size, the keyboard, whatever, but you won't be able to compare all these characteristics, right? So you will, at the end, buy one laptop more or less randomly among those that you think are the best ones. So this is what it says. But this laptop has to be within a range of what you consider the best laptop. Right, and the tolerance with respect to less than optimal quality in each characteristic defines the preferences, and as we move to higher classes, the preference toward so the tolerance toward reduction in quality will reduce, but the tolerance with respect to increasing prices will increase. High class consumers will be indifferent to the price, but they will be very demanding on the quality. Right, some results. Initial conditions, we have 50 manufacturing firms, 15 capital good firms. We start with two income classes, so basically an entrepreneur with five workers. Firms have started with hierarchical structure, which represents mainly empirical observation across the Western countries, and all the results are averages over multiple runs to control for random effects. The results I'll go through very quickly, and I'll basically summarize them, but basically what we do here is some empirical validation at the macroeconomic level, see if we replicate some of the macro evidence, and then we will look at the different aspect of structural change in terms of relation between changing capital vintages and organizational structure and wage performance, and the demand side in terms of quality of the goods and preferences of the consumer. So very quickly, these are the we simulate this for 2000 periods, time periods. These are not equivalent to years, but I won't get to that debate now. So this is what we basically observe is a period of sort of Malthusian growth or sort of demand-led regime, we call it, where only demand induces growth. And then you reach a point which you have a takeoff, and then you start exponential growth. This is basically showing a long-term model or long-term empirical evidence like Madison would observe. I have to really rush. And this is what we call basically Caldorian regime, the expression of what we observe now in the world, basically again reproducing a sort of industrial revolution type of dynamic. Kuznet curve, we represent Calder Verdun law, capital deepening and growth sort of Kuznet's stylized, sorry, Calder stylized facts. And we do sort of analyze the relation between macro variables, but I won't go into these results. We can go back in the if you're interested. So we go into the analysis of the parameters. I hope you have memorized which are the parameters that we look at. Otherwise, I have them here if you want to go back, but I'll just summarize the results. So when we think about the organization and product technology, so again, an increased sigma, so an increased productivity of the capital goods when a capital good firm innovate, and organizations which are steeper, so more layers for the same number of shop floor workers. What we observe is that the large number of organizational tiers and the larger productivity gains leads to higher output despite a higher income inequality. Which, after they take off, only after they take off, has a negative effect on growth. But we also observe that organizational tiers has a nonlinear effect on inequality, meaning that it increases. So, white fat organizations increase inequality because basically they don't induce the takeoff, right? Because there's no investment, all the profits go to managers, so we never observe a takeoff, and we observe a very large inequality. When we look at organization and wage structure, well, this is, of course, they induce a very large inequality, which has a negative effect on growth, at least in our model. If we look at the demand side, product and preference heterogeneity, we observe that product variety plays a relevant role in economic growth, but only when it is generated through time. If we start with a very large product variety, there's never the takeoff. And the intuition here is that consumers start selecting firms since the beginning, and firms do not have time to build the capital, meaning they don't have the opportunity to increase their productivity, and the cumulative causation process never starts. I can go to the main mechanism if you want afterwards, and I leave the conclusion slides there so that you can read it and stop. Sorry.